Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kufayin Aleph and Amud Aleph, six line down. My Braita. Gemara before said that Rav Nachman had said to Rav Huna in yesterday's daf, had Rav seen this Braita, then he definitely would have had a different opinion. And Rav Huna said, no, that Rav knew about this Braita, and he maintained his opinion. The Gemara wants to know, my Braita. What was the Braita that Rav Nachman was referring to that was more explicit about the position of Rav Yehuda? The Tanya, Ayere Shayu Noshimbo Elef Zuz. So they had a creditor that was coming after him for the 1,000 Zuz that he owed. Upar Mehem Chamesh Meot Zuz. And he paid back half of the amount that he owed, 500 Zuz. Edim Mikarim Et Ashtar. The Edim rip up the Shtar. V'kotvim Lo Shtar Acher. And then they write him a new Shtar, Mizman HaRishon. From the first date. So over here you see the issues that were brought up according to the different Deot and the Rishonim yesterday as to what exactly Rav Nachman differed from the position of Rav Huna. You see, number one is that the Braita says it's Mizman Rishon and not Mizman Sheni. And number two, the Braita is clear that it's speaking about Edim and not about Beit Din. So that could be the two points that are made in difference between what Rav Nachman thought Rav was thinking versus what Rav Huna thought Rav was thinking. Number one is that it's Mizman Rishon and not Mizman Sheni. Number two is that it's Edim and not Beit Din. And so in the end, that's what the Gemara differentiator distinguished is that Rav's position said that only Beit Din could do it, and that's why he didn't agree with Rav Yehuda, even if you say Rav Yehuda is Mizman Rishon. So that's Divrei Rav Yehuda. Rav Yossi Omer, Shtar Zeh Emunach Bimkomo, V'yichtivu Shover. So Rabbi Yossi Lashitato says that this shtar will remain in place and they'll write a receipt for the amount of money that he paid. Umitnei shnei dvarim amru kodvim shover, and there are two reasons to write a receipt instead of ripping up the shtar. Achat kedei shikof leporo, one of them is to keep pressure on the loveh, the borrower, the debtor over here to repay the amount. Here the Rashbam says similar to what he said in yesterday's daf, is that the loveh is afraid that he might lose the receipt. And since he's afraid he might lose the receipt, he's under pressure to make sure that he repays the whole loan. Therefore, they could rip up the shtar, and it would no longer be relevant. But as long as the shtar is still outstanding, and he has the shover, the longer he takes to repay the original amount, or what was left of what he owed, the longer he's at more risk for the malveh than making a full claim against him if he loses the shover. So the Rashbam learns it. The Ramban, similar to, again, what he explained yesterday, says that based on the Yerushalmi, that the larger amount of outstanding debt keeps more pressure on the individual to repay the amount. And that's because if you have a larger outstanding debt which you have to repay, then you've used up your credit. And people know about that, and they won't lend you more money, or they'll put pressure on you when you're selling things. So he has a vested interest in seeing the reduction of the amount that is outstanding, even though technically he's already paid half of it back, but the outstanding shtar holds the whole amount in it, and people will look at it as if he has that credit extended already to him, and therefore his credit will be tight, and he will also be under pressure or duress when he goes to sell things. So he has a vested interest in paying it down. V'achat, and the second reason is, k'dei shigveh mizman rishon, so that he can collect from the first date, which is that right now the malveh, the creditor, has a lien on the property from the date of the shtar. If you rip up the shtar and write a new shtar from the new date, then his lien starts much later than the original lien. And why should he lose out on his lien? It says, Rabbi Yehuda nami mizman rishon kamar. Didn't Rabbi Yehuda explicitly say that it was from the first date? When they rewrite the shtar from the original date, not the new date of when they're ripping it up. So, hachi kamar le Rabbi Yossi le Rabbi Yehuda. This is what Rabbi Yossi responded to Rabbi Yehuda. Im mizman rishon kamar. If you say that we rewrite the shtar based on the original date, but ligna alach bechado. Then I argue with you about one issue, which is that it's better to give a receipt rather than have the shtar ripped up and then rewrite the shtar. If you say that when they rewrite the shtar, they date it based on the date now, not on the previous date, that's what you believe. Paligna alach betarte. Then I argue about two issues with you. I argue about the fact that it should be zman rishon and not zman sheni. And number two is, I still think that it's better to have the debt outstanding, the full debt outstanding, to keep pressure on the loveh, rather than rip up the shtar and write a smaller shtar. Now, as the Balei Tosafot point out over here, the Braita is explicit. Rabbi Yehuda said, Mizman Rishon. So what's Rabbi Yossi saying? Oh, if you say. What do you mean if you say? He said, Mizman Rishon. So the Balei Tosafot say that when Rabbi Yehuda spoke or said his statement, that statement was ambiguous. He didn't mention Zman Rishon or Zman Sheni, similar to our Mishnah, where there's no indication as to whether it's Zman Rishon and Zman Sheni. And there we have a Machlok in the Rishonim as to what he meant. So similarly, Rabbi Yehuda's position was vague, and that's why Rabbi Yossi is saying, if it's Mizman Rishon, if it's Mizman Sheni. The Braita brings Rabbi Yehuda's position in truth. That's what Rabbi Yehuda's position is. But that's not what Rabbi Yossi heard, and that's why Rabbi Yossi couches his position as a if. If it is Mizman Rishon, argue on one issue. If that's Mizman Sheni, then I argue on two issues. Alright, Tanu Rabbanan, move on to another Braita that says, Shtar, Shizmano Katuv Bishabbat, Oba Sarab Tishrei. You have a document which the date of the document is either Shabbat, or it is a Sarab Tishrei, which is Yom HaKippurim. Shtar Me'uchar Hu V'kasher. That is a post-dated shtar, and it's fine. Dear Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Posel. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that's problematic. Amarlo Rabbi Yehuda, Valo Maseh Balafanecha B'tzipori. You, Rabbi Yossi, wasn't there an incident with a shtar exactly like this in Tzipori? V'ekshartah. And you said that it was fine, that the shtar was fine. Amalo, kishehechsharti, bezehechsharti. When I was makshirit, I was makshir in this type of issue, or in this instance. Rabbi Yehuda nami, bezekamar. Isn't Rabbi Yehuda saying, in this instance, you said it was fine? And so then we'll have an explanation of this in 1 second by Rabbi Padat. But to understand what's happening over here, you have to take a number of assumptions, which the Rishbam lays out in a couple of places over here. He notes that, first of all, when you have a shtar that is dated on Shabbat on Yom HaKippurim, the assumption is that it was not written on Shabbat and was not written on Yom HaKippurim. We are machzik, B'nai Yisrael, to be Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, and we don't expect that they wrote the shtar on Shabbat or they wrote the shtar on Yom HaKippurim. So now we have two options as to how to explain the fact that the shtar was dated on Yom Kippur, dated on Shabbat. One option is to say that it was a post-dated shtar. That's what Rabbi Yehuda claims. The option to say is that it was a predated shtar. The shtar actually was dated before the time of the transaction. So here again, the Rashbam says that we assume that shtarot in general are kasher. But that's based on the principle that we have that when edim sign on a shtar, it's as if kenechruka edutam bebeitin. It's as if their testimony has already been accepted in beitin. And the fact that we require kiyum shtarot, which is a rabbinic imposition, that you have to validate the shtar, is exactly that. It's a rabbinic imposition. But underlying the oraita, we would assume that the shtar is a shtar kasher. And that's again what the Rashbam quotes in the name of the Rabbeinu Chananel, that we assume here that the shtar is a kasher shtar. If you want to undermine the kashruta shtar, then you have the burden of proof to show that it was a shtar mukdam. So we are going to assume here, where the dating of the shtar makes it impossible that the day on which the shtar has the date it was written, then we're going to assume that it was a post-dated shtar, and it is a kasher shtar. We don't assume that it's a shtar mukdam, and if you want to make the claim that it is a shtar mukdam, that it was a pre-dated shtar, then you're going to have to bring evidence to that fact. Otherwise, we're going to assume two things here. Number one is that people do not write shtarot on Yom Kippur and on Shabbat. And number two is that if the choice between making a shtar kasher or shtar pasul, those are the two options to explain the situation, we're going to take the path that says that it is a shtar kasher, because we're going to assume in general that shtarot are kasherim. So now, Amar Rabbi Pidat. Rabbi Pidat comes to explain this conversation that took place between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, to explain where they have common ground and where they are different in their opinions. And that is, Akol Modim, everybody agrees, Shimus Kaknu lo onoto shel shtar. If we have the date of the shtar is obvious, benitzayt onato mikuvere b'Shabbat or Asara b'Tishrei, and we see explicitly that the shtar was written on Shabbat or was written on Yom Kippurim, shtar meucharu v'kasher. Both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda in this case will agree that we assume that it is a post-dated shtar, and it's a fine post-dated shtar. The reason being is that it's obvious that it's a post-dated shtar. It's so obvious that it's a post-dated shtar that even Rabbi Yossi will agree here that nobody's going to make a mistake about the shtar because the evidence is so clear in the shtar itself that it is a shtar me'uchar. What that evidence is not clear. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here says, Shim Kataf, if it's written in the shtar, Shikatvu ha'edim, the edim wrote into the shtar, Huskaknu leida onato shel shtar. We looked into the matter about the timing of the shtar. Benimtza bo diadua de shtar meucharu v'kasher. And we know that it's a shtar meuchar and it's kasher. So the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom reads this, and it's hard to read, one of the reasons the Rashbam rejects this view of the Rabbeinu Chananel, is because nowhere do you see over here shikatvu. We never see anywhere in the Gemara that it says that this language was included in the shtar. But Rabbeinu Gershom writes, you know, it's so obvious. Why is it so obvious? It's because it's actually embedded in the shtar. This language that says, we the Edim looked into the matter and we know that this shtar is a shtar mukhar. So now you have clear evidence in the shtar, it's self-evident in the shtar, that this is a shtar mukhar. And then in a case where the Gemara continues, we're going to see in a second, lo nechluku, in a case where they do argue, that's a case where it's not written into the shtar. It's not explicitly indicated in the shtar. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom learns it. On the other hand, if you look in the Balei Tosafot, the Balei Tosafot say, how lishna mashma she'en katuv lehed yakach. But Balei Tosafot say the same thing that the Rashbam says in the next Amud, which is, the language of the Gemara indicates that it seems to be itself evident, but it's not written explicitly into the shtar. Ella. So then the Balei Tosafot give the reason that it's obvious is that what's written in the shtar is that it was written on the 3rd of Nisan. And it, Rosh Chodesh was on Thursday. Or it was written on a Monday, and the Rosh Chodesh was on Shabbat. And if Rosh Chodesh was on Shabbat, then Yom HaKippurim was on Monday. So it's obvious from the dating inside of the shtar that we can figure out that it was happened to be on Yom Kippur, it happened to be on Shabbat, because of the way that it's dated. This is the Hebrew dates. And then the Balei Tosafot go on to say that this could only be if it's in the back end of the month, not at the beginning of the month. Because we find in the Gemara and Sanhedrin that people make mistakes with regards to the calculations early in the month because they don't know if the month was a Malay or a Chaser, the previous month. So sometimes people get confused as to whether it's the 3rd of the month or the 4th of the month. That confusion comes because they don't know whether the previous month was Malay or Chaser. So the Balei Tosafot say that this is only true if it's written towards the end of the month, the dating is towards the end of the month, because then we will not assume that they made a mistake. And that's what the Ri says, the Mayri Achar Rubo Shel Chodesh. It's after the majority of the month has gone by, after the 15th of the month, where everybody knows whether the previous month was a Malay or Chaser, and they already have aligned their dates, and they know what their dates are. So that's the way that the Balei Tosafot learn. On the other hand, the Rashbam learns, it's very interesting, he says up here in the second wide line, towards the lower part of the Rashbam, the second wide line, he says, the case where they use a solar calendar, and they marked in the shtar the solar date, meaning that the secular calendar date, and then we went and we checked the secular date, and it matches up with the Hebrew date that was Yom Kippur, the lunar date that was Shabbat, or the lunar date that was Yom HaKippurim. In this instance, you have three different approaches to what was obvious or how it was obvious in the shtar that it was Shabbat or it was Yom HaKippurim. According to the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's because it's explicitly written that way. They didn't testify to that fact. The Balei Tosafot say it's based on the dating. It's so obvious through the dating that it was on Shabbat and it was on Yom HaKippurim. According to the Rashbam, the secular date matches up to what would have been Yom Kippur or Shabbat in the lunar calendar. So for that case, where it's obvious that it's a shtar me'uchar, then even Rav Yossi agrees that that shtar is a kasher shtar, because even in a long time from now, or in a time period where people don't even remember about the shtar, if they go look at the shtar and they look at the dating on the shtar, it'll be obvious that it was written on a Shabbat Yom Kippur and that it was a shtar me'uchar. So that case, even Rav Yossi agrees, because then you won't have the mistake, which we'll see will happen, or the problem that will arise, but you don't know it's a shtar meuchar. Lo nechloku, the machloki between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi is a shtar meuchar ba'alma. It's just a regular shtar meuchar. So for the Rabbeinu Gershom, you can see that at the top of the Rabbeinu Gershom, lo nechloku lo b'shtar meuchar ba'alma. Ve'ein katu bokein. There's nothing written in it. As the Rabbeinu Gershom says, they agree in the case where it's written explicitly. In a case where it's not written explicitly in it, that's where they disagree. Here the Rashbam, like the Balei Tosafot on the previous Amud, rejects the view of the Rabbeinu Gershom for two reasons. First of all, Gemara never says the word katav in it. And number two is, if it's written in the shtar that it was Shabbat or it was Yom Kippur, why do you need the Edim then to go write again in the shtar that it was Yom Kippur or Shabbat? It's obvious that it's a shtar me'uchar from the first part of the shtar. Why do you need the Edim to come and verify exactly what you know from the first part of the shtar? And he writes about that position that's brought by the Rabbeinu Gershom, v'chuzeh hevel v'leitzanutu, that it is emptiness and foolishness, what he's saying. And he thinks, like the Balei Tosafot, that, again, before it was a case where the dating belie the fact that it was on Shabbat, or it was on Yom Tov, or it was on Yom Kippurim. And over here, it's less obvious. It means that you have a shtar mu'uchar v'alma. It's just a post-dated shtar that does not fall out on Shabbat, Yom Kippurim, or any special day. It's just a post-dated shtar. The Yehuda l'tameh, Yehuda's l'shita ta'odamar, ain kodvim shuver. Since you don't write a receipt, v'lo lafik mechurva, you're not going to run into a problem. Rabbi Yossi l'tameh, Rabbi Yossi's l'shita ta'odamar kodvim shuver, that you do write a receipt, v'nafik mechurva. And from that will become a terrible outcome. Now the terrible outcome that Rabbi Yossi is describing over here is going to be explained in the Gemara, which is that in a case where you have a post-dated shtar, there's a possibility that the individual borrowed the money in Nisan. Then a couple months later, he repaid half of the loan, and we give him a receipt to show that he repaid half the loan, even he repaid the full loan. We give him a receipt to that effect. But the shtar, even though he borrowed the money in Nisan, he dated the shtar for Tishrei. So now, many years later, they come to court, and the creditor says, he owes me money. Here's the shtar. The shtar says that he borrowed money from me in Tishrei. So the guy says, I paid it back already. He takes out the receipt. The receipt is dated before the shtar. So what the guy says is, yeah, you might have paid back the money before, but now we borrowed the money again in Tishrei after the shover, after the receipt that is dated because the shtar was post-dated. And that's the churva that Rabbi Yossi is speaking about. If you allow for post-dated shtarot, you might end up with the situation in which the shtar is dated after the receipt that is given. And that means that the debtor in that situation is going to lose out because the creditor can now make a claim that the receipt was for a previous loan. The shtar is for a new loan that was post the date of the receipt. Now, it doesn't have to be a case of deceit, which is a case where the malveh is trying to cheat him and make a claim twice. It could be that he just forgot. It's many years later and he doesn't remember. Or it could even be that it's your shim that are picking up the shtarot after the fact and they don't have the information. They didn't know it was a post-dated shtar. So it might not even be intentional deceit over here. It could be a churva that happens unintentionally because of the fact that the shtar is post-dated. So Rabbi Yossi says, I won't allow for a post-dated shtar unless it's obvious that it's a post-dated shtar. Once it's obvious it's a post-dated shtar, then even though he has a receipt that is before that date, we will accept the receipt because we know it was a post-dated shtar. But in a case where it's not obvious that it's a post-dated shtar, then you could have this problem. For Rabbi Yehuda, you don't write a shover, you rip up the shtar when he repays it, either fully or you rip it up and write a new shtar. For him, you never have this problem. That's why he allows for a post-dated shtar. So, Amar Rabbi Yehuna, Brei de Rabbi Yeshua, Afilu leman damar kodvin shover, even according to the one who says that you write a shover, it means Rabbi Yossi, Hani milei apalga. That's only if he paid back a portion of the loan. Avala lekulei loan. On the other hand, if he repays the full amount, then we rip up the shtar. Even Rabbi Yossi agrees, once you repay the full amount, we rip up the full shtar, we don't write a receipt. Velohi. And that is not correct, the Gemara says. Afilu akulei kadvina. Because even on the full shtar, meaning that he repaid the full amount, we still write a receipt. Kiha, the Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, have a masik bezuzei b'Rabbi Abba. This is similar to the case that we just had in yesterday's daf, where Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef was a creditor and had a claim against Rabbi Abba. He was asking him to repay him the outstanding debt that he had. Ata the kamed Rabbi Chanina bar Papi, and they came before the judge, Rabbi Chanina bar Papi, to adjudicate the case. Which is interesting, because yesterday, he had the similar case, and they came before Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. They had the same situation in which, but in yesterday's daf, they came before Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka to adjudicate the case. And then today's version of the story, they came before Rabbi Chanina bar Papi. So you're talking about Dayanim, or expert Dayanim that they came before, whether it's the same loan, or they had multiple loans outstanding, or whether this was an ongoing issue between them, it seems to be that since they were Talmidei Chachamim, we don't assume they're lying over here, but since they were so involved in their learning, they either forgot about the loan, they didn't remember if it was repaid, and now they're coming to have these cases adjudicated. Amalei, Havlei Zuzai, Yishakul Zuzeh, Yitzchak Bar Yosef says, pay me back the money that you owe me, Rabbi Abba. Amalei, Havlei Shtarai. So Rabbi Abba says, give me back the shtar. I'm willing to repay you, but I want the shtar back before I repay you. And then you can have your money. Amalei, Shtarchai, Irkasli. Your shtar was lost. It got ripped up, it was burnt, something happened to the shtar. I no longer am in possession of the shtar. Echtov l'chatavra, but I'll write you a receipt. Receive the money from you, and that you're patur. Amalei, harav ushmel d'amrei tarvayu, ein kodvim shover. Don't we have the psak of Rav and Shmuel say we don't write receipts? I mean, that receipts have risk embedded in them. Written, you don't show up the shtar, you're not going to get your money back. Amar. So it's not clear here who said this, whether it's Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef responding to Rabbi Abba's claim, or whether it's Rav Chanina bar Papi, the Dayan, who's responding according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, this is Rav Chani bar Papi. who is responding to the claim of Rabbi Abba, and he says, Man Yoiv Lan Ma'afrei the Rabbu Shmuel Raminan Ba'ainim. Who would give us from the dirt or the dust of the feet of Rabbi Shmuel that we can put into our eyes? Either that's a compliment in a sense that Rabbi Shmuel, the great Rabbi Shmuel, we would eat from the dust of their feet and put the dust of their feet into our eyes. But despite that fact, you're wrong over here. Or maybe it's a little bit of a sarcastic tone over here, which is that if we had the dirt of Rabbi Shmuel, we'd put it in our eyes. Meaning that why should Rabbi Shmuel govern over here? Because Rabbi Yochanan Barish Lakish, if Rabbi Yochanan Barish Lakish agreeing to Amrei Tarvayu, could vinch over there. That you do write receipts. When Rabin came from Eretz Yisrael, he's probably bringing the memra from Rabbi Yochanan, but it's here in the name of Rabbi Yilal. Probably got it from Rabbi Yochanan, could vinch over there. That we do write receipts. That's a machloket Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, and Bavel, Rabin Shmuel say you don't write receipts. Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish and Eretz Yisrael say you do write receipts. And when they have a machloket between Rabin and Rabbi Yochanan, the lokas to Rabbi Yochanan, and over here we have Rabin Shmuel versus Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, we're going to paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, and that's what Rabbi Chani Bar Papi is saying back to him. Listen, it might be that Rabin Shmuel said that, but we paskin like Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, and that B'nai Eretz Yisrael here are going to govern over Rabin Shmuel, so that might be why either he was sarcastic and saying, okay, that's Rabin Shmuel and all their dust that we put in our eyes, but we have Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, or he could have been sent it seriously, that we always accept the psak of in Rabin Shmuel because we're from Bavel. But in this instance, there's Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish from Eretz Yisrael, and they, and the Klal of psak say that we follow their position, and they're going to trump in this situation that says that you do write a shover. Where Gemara says, Umistavra the Kodvim shover. It makes sense. It's logical that we do write receipts for the repayment of loans. If you think we don't write receipts, what do you mean? So now that the malve lost the shtar, the love is going to have a party and say, I'm not going to pay you back? Why should it be that the love should benefit from the fact that the malve lost the shtar? The malve lost the shtar, so now the love is off the hook. He doesn't have to pay any money back. He can go celebrate that he doesn't owe any money. He owes the money. Whether there's a shtar or not, he still owes the money. So of course we write a receipt and say that you got to repay the money that you owed. So Matkiflo Abaye, Abaye challenges that and says, wait, the same is true in the other direction. But it doesn't point out over here that Abaye argued with Rava on this point, and he says here, or it seems that Abaye accepted the position of Rava, that there's a problem over here. Velamai Kutvin Shover. So now you're going to say, okay, let's write a receipt. Avad Shovro shows that. If the debtor loses the receipt, Yochal Hala V'chadeh, the Malva can now come back and claim again against him and celebrate and enjoy claiming twice against him because he lost the receipt. So there's just as much risk in the other direction. So now you have to write a receipt, the Malva is on the hook. If you don't write the receipt, then the Malva is on the hook. So why are you favoring the Malva to say that the Malva should always get repaid versus favoring the Malva to say the Malva that he's going to have to keep this shover, he's going to have to keep this receipt intact? So why are you favoring the Malve and not the Love? Amalei Rova in. You're right. Eved Love Ish Malve. They have a principle in general based on the Pasuk in Mishlei that the Love is the servant of the Malve. He's subjugated. If we have a choice between favoring the creditor or the debtor, we're going to always favor the creditor because in essence, the fact that the Love borrowed from him subjugates it to him, makes him Chayav and Achrayi responsible to repay the debt. And therefore, whoever's going to have to carry the burden here is going to be the Loveh, not the Malveh. And therefore, we give a Shover, we give a receipt, and we say the Loveh's got to hang on to it, and it's his problem if he loses it, versus the case of the Malveh, where we say he doesn't have to hold on to the Shtar. He should have held on to the Shtar, but if he doesn't have a Shtar, he's not going to lose out on getting repayment of his loan. The Loveh can't say, if you don't hand me the Shtar, I'm not going to repay you the debt that is outstanding. He has an obligation to pay it, irrespective of if he shows the Shtar or not. He is entitled to a receipt, and that he will get a receipt for the repayment of the loan. The truth is that the chashash here is different in each of these cases. For the chashash by the loveh, in essence, shouldn't have to repay when he doesn't get the shtar. I mean that he's doing this for the right reasons. He says, if you don't give me the shtar, I'm at risk for you double claiming against me. On the other hand, by the case of the loveh, if he gets a shover and gets a receipt, and he loses the receipt, then the malveh is going to illegally come and claim against him twice. So there is reason to favor the Lovel over here, because with the favoring the Lovel, we're protecting him against deceit or cheating, versus the case where if we favor the Malveh, then the Lovel is going to be forced to pay, even though in some ways he's justified in not paying, because he's at risk if he repays without getting the Ishtar back. Despite that fact, we say, and therefore we favor the malveh in this case and say that you have to repay it, then we'll give you a receipt. Don't we have a Mishnah in Shvi'it that says, Shteri chova muktamim, if you have predated shterot, psulim, they are invalid. Vamucharim, postdated shterot, are kshirim. So let's divide this up. In terms of predated shterot, we know what the problem is. The problem is that you are moving the lien back to a time period where it wasn't valid. The lien begins at the time that the loan was extended. You predate the shtar, you're giving a power to the creditor that he doesn't deserve. And then he can go and collect from encumbered property as a lien on the property predates some people who actually predated him. You have buyers that bought property before the loan was extended. You predate the shtar, you're giving them the power to go take property or foreclose on the property that these buyers bought. And that's problematic. It's illegal. So that shtar is a shtar pasul. As the Rashbam notes over here, not only can he not collect from the predate, he can't even collect from the shtar based on the real date of the loan. This is an invalid shtar. How invalid the shtar is subject to a machloket rishonim that we actually saw earlier in the Masechta. We also saw it in Baba Metzia. Might also have to do with the machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to when you have interest embedded in a loan, that makes the shtar pasul. What does it mean that the shtar is pasul? One way to read it is that the shtar is pasul, pasul de gamre. It's meaningless. The shtar has no value, no validity whatsoever. That means you have now a milva alpeh. You have an oral loan that is extended, which gives two things. It gives you no right to have a lien on the property. And number two is the loveh, the debtor, has a right to say parati. I paid it back. On the other hand, there is another possibility to say that when we say it's pasul over here, means it's pasul to act as a shtar. You do not have a lien on the property. It's not a milveh b'shtar. But what you do have is a right of collection that protects against the loveh, the debtor, saying, parati, I paid it back. The shtar is evidence of an outstanding loan, and the loveh can't just say parati now. He has to bring evidence to the fact that he repaid it because you have the shtar that gives you evidence of the fact that the loan's outstanding. So that's a machloket in the Rishonim as to when we say pasul here, does it mean pasul de gamrei, and it's a meaningless, worthless piece of paper? Or do we say, yes, it doesn't carry the tokef of a milveh b'shtar, of a documented loan which will allow you a lien, but it still gives you evidence of the fact that there was a loan, and therefore the loveh doesn't have a right to say parati. That's number one. Number two, the Rashbam notes over here, when we're talking about a predated shtar, we're talking about an individual, say, who borrowed money on the first of Nisan, and then they predate the shtar to say that he borrowed on the first of Adar. That's what we're talking about here by shtar mukdam. There is another type of shtar mukdam, which is a case where they wrote up the shtar to borrow the money on Nisan, but they didn't actually borrow the money on Nisan. They waited till Iyar before he borrowed the money. So it was not intentionally made into a shtar mukdam. It turned out to be a shtar mukdam because even though their intent had to be to extend the loan and borrow the money on the first of Nisan when they wrote the document, in actuality, the money wasn't borrowed until the first of Iyar. Over there, that's a machloket amuraim in the Gemara of Baba Metzia. The Rashbam quotes that machloket over here as to why the shtar is good in that case. So there are two possibilities. One possibility is said by Rav Ashi, who says that it mukila b'shtari hatna'a, the case where it's basically a credit line. In a situation where there's a credit line, then the lien is established from the moment the credit line is established, even though he only draws down on the credit line later. And that's why over here, it's not considered to be a shtar mukdam. Or you have the position of a baye, edav v'chutamav zachin lo. That once the edim sign on the shtar, that's what generates the lien. So even though he only borrows the money, or actually draws down the money later, from the moment that the edim sign on the shtar, that's what generates the lien. So there it's a machloket amoraim, as to whether that shtar, which was dated for a particular date when they thought they were going to borrow the money, but only borrowed the money later, is that called a shtar mukdam or not? According to Rav Ashi, it is a shtar mukdam, unless you claim that it is a shtar hakna'a, it's a credit line that was established, and he drew down on the credit line later, but the lien started from the moment the credit was extended. Or according to Abaye, you can have, as long as the shtar was signed on that day, that generates the lien, even though the money itself was only drawn down or borrowed at a later date. So that's a clarification of as shtar mukdamim. Now, as far as shtarot amu'ucharim, we're talking about post-dated shtarot, the Mishnah in Shvi'it says they are kshirim, that they are perfectly good shtarot. Amar Rav Nuna, so Rav Nuna qualifies that Mishnah in Shvi'it and says, lo shtanu el shtarei halva'a. That's only true when you're dealing with loan documents that are post-dated. Aval shtarei mekach u'memkar, afilu mu'ucharim namitzulim. Post-dated contracts for a transaction, for a buying and selling of property, those post-dated shtarot are problematic. My taima. What's the difference between a transactional document versus a loan document? Zimnin demizavin le arab nisan. Sometimes you'll have a case where the individual purchased the property in nisan, meaning it was sold to him in nisan. But he postdated the shtar and wrote that the transaction or the purchase really took place in Tishrei 6 months later. In the interim, between Nisan and Tishrei, the seller came across money, and then he bought back the property. In the way the Rashbam says it, there was an embedded tenai in the transaction that if he came into money, that he would buy back the property. And sure enough, he got some money, and he wasn't under pressure to sell it anymore. And he bought back the property. The problem is that he bought it back after the transaction, the original sale, which was in Nisan, but he bought it back before the dating of the shtar, which is in Tishrei. So now what happens is, he purchases it back, when Tishrei shows up, the buyer is going to pull out the shtar and say, I bought it from you again. So now you have a problem, which is the post-dated shtar is actually going to be after the time period where he bought the property back from it. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, shtarei halva'a nami. Why don't you say the same thing with loan documents? Zimin de Yosef in Nisan, he borrows the money in Nisan. Kativ le shtar mi Tishrei, and he writes the credit document dated in Tishrei for 6 months later. Umitrami le zuzei beni ubeni. He came into money to repay the debt earlier time, and he repays it between Nisan and Tishrei. Uparale, and he paid it off. Vamale havli shtarai. And he says to the creditor, give me my shtar back. Vamale irkasli, says it was ripped up, I lost it, it's gone. Kativ le tavra, and he writes a shtover receipt for the fact that he got the money. Chimate zimne, and when Tishrei shows up, mapikle, he takes out the loan document, it says, you owe me money. Vamale, hani, hashtahud yaziv minai. And he pulls out the shtover, he pulls out the receipt and says, I repaid him already. He says, that's fine, the shtover is dated for the middle of Tammuz. So this document says you borrowed money in Tishrei. So you're right, you paid back the money that you borrowed in Nisan, but now you borrowed more money from me in Tishrei. So if that's the case, then you're going to have the same problem by halva'ot that you have by Mekach u'Memkar. Where it says, Kasavar, Rav Amnuna is of the position, similar to Rabbi Yehuda, that ain't kodvin shover, that we don't write receipts. So if you don't write receipts, you're not going to have that problem by halva'ot. But there will still be a difference then between Mekach u'Memkar and halva'ot, which is that the Rabbeinu Gershom points out over here. Rabbeinu Gershom says the difference is aval b'shtari mekach u'memkar ein noheg shover. Over there, we don't write receipts. The lo matzi meimarle, because the individual who sold the property can't say to him ilo katav li shover. If you don't write for me a receipt, lo pirkan l'arai, I'm not going to redeem the property. Delokeach ma'ichpat le im lo yiftenu, because the buyer says, okay, don't redeem the property. I'll keep the property. I don't care. I don't have to give you a receipt. I don't have to give you any documentation. So there's a difference between mekach u'memkar and the case of halva'ah. By the case of halva'ah, either have to write a shover or receipt, or you have to rip up the document. If we write ein kotvin shover, that we don't write receipts, then we are safe. But at least over there, the lover, the debtor, has some leverage over the malveh, which is he'll say, you don't give me the shtar back, then I'm not going to repay you. And the other guy says, all right, I don't have the shtar, I'll give you a shover, I'll give you a receipt. But that's only because he has leverage to demand the receipt. By a case of mekach u'memkar, you have no leverage at all. Because if you say to him, listen, I want to buy the property back, but I only do it if you give me a receipt. The guy says, don't buy the property back, I'm not going to give you a receipt. There's no reason for him to give you any documentation in the case of mekach u'memkar. And so in that case, the only way to have the transaction go through is through documentation, but the documentation that might be dated on the current date, if it's dated on the current date, then you have a risk that if you have a post-dated shtar, it'll come back and make a claim against it. By the halva'ah, since we don't write receipts and we demand the shtar back, in that case, we're not going to have that problem because the loveh has leverage, and that leverage will give him the right to make claims, either to demand the shtar back, or the right to get a shover receipt, and we'll see in a second how he will deal with it, but the post-dated shtar, how he can deal with this issue or overcome the problem. So, Amalei, Rav Yehmer the Rav Kahana, Vamila Rav Yehmer v'difti the Rav Kahana, Vayidah, today, Dikadvinan shtarei mu'uchare, we write post-dated shtarot without a problem. Dikadvin and Tavra, and we also write shovarim, we also write receipts, which will lead us right into the problem that Rav Yossi mentioned, which is if you have a shtar mukhar and you write receipts, you have a risk that the malveh is going to come back and make a claim post the shover, because it's a post-dated shtar. Why do we do that? What right do we have to do this? Or how do we do this if we're going to fall into this trap? After Rabbi Abba explained to his sofrim that you have to do the following, when you guys write a shtar me'uchar, you have to add the following language into the shtar. This shtar was not written in its proper time, meaning that it is a shtar me'uchar. We delayed it and wrote it. So there's an explicit mention in the shtar that is a shtar me'uchar. Once you have that explicit reference in the shtar that's a shtar me'uchar, that will get protect against that fear that Rabbi Yossi had that he'll peel out the shtar, the post-dated shtar, after the receipt. Once you know that it was a post-dated shtar, then we know that even if the receipt has a date before that, that's not a reason to believe that he owes the money, because the fact that it was post-dated might mean that it's after the shaver, after the receipt in this case. It's because he writes in explicitly into this, shtar danan, lo bizimnei kitavnei, ela echarnuhu vikadvenuhu. Amalei Rav Ashi the Rav Kahana. Then Rav Ashi then says to Rav Kahana, Vaidna to lo kabdin and hochi. We don't even do what Rav Safra said. So the Balei Tosafot say over here that Rav Safra told the Sofrim to do this because there were people coming to the Sofrim and asking them to write these post-dated shtarot. So they needed to deal with, how do we deal with these post-dated shtarot? So Rav Safra gave them instructions about what to do. Well, if you do that, or if you follow that protocol of Rav Safra, that's fine, then you solve the problem. But what Rav Ashi points out to Rav Kahana is that we don't do that. We do the shtarot amu'acharim. We write receipts, and we don't write in the shtar that's a shtar mu'achar. So, but the damalei Rav Safra l'safrei ki kadvinu hanei tavrei. When you write these receipts, if you know the time that was in the shtar, then kitvu, write the time period in the shtar. Ilo, if you do not know the time period of the shtar, kitvu stama. Write the shover without any date in the shover. So basically, we came up with a protection for the lover, which is, if the sofer knows the exact date of the shtar, if it's a post-dated shtar, then he'll take the post-date, and he'll write that into the shover. So now the receipt will match up with the shtar, and he can't come and make claim that it was borrowed money again after the shover, the receipt, because the receipt's dated for the same date, or the same day, as the shtar. But he says to them, if you don't know the date of the shtar, then don't write any shtar date into this shover, into this receipt. You'll give him a blank receipt that says that he repaid the money, and there's no date on the receipt. That way he's protected. Anytime the person pulls out the shtar, he can hold up the receipt and say it was after that point in time, and I repeat the money, and he's protected. The chayim at the nafik, that any time that the malveh takes out the shtar, he'll have the shover to defend his position and protect himself because he has a non-dated receipt. So the Rishbam points out over here that the malveh, the creditor over here, have to be very careful. Which is that if you lent money to a loveh, and then the loveh repaid it, and he got a receipt for the repayment, the creditor will have to make sure never to lend that same amount of money to the loveh again. Because if he lends the same amount of money, he's actually putting himself into risk, which is that he has this blank shover, and he can make the claim that he already repaid it. So that's what the Rishbam points out over here, that if he relends him money, he has to be careful to relend him the money that's a different amount than the original amount that he lent him, so that he doesn't have this blank shover to make a claim against him. So now, Amrle Ravina the Ravashi. So Ravina says to Ravashi, Vamrila Ravashi the Ravkan, or some say it's Ravashi also posing this to Ravkan again. Today we don't do any of this. We don't write in the shtar that it's a shtar mukhar. And we don't blank date the shover, the receipts over here. So you have neither of these protections for the shtar mu'achar. Amalei Rabbonon tikune tikine. The Rabbonon instituted a takana, manda ovid. Whoever follows it, whoever takes up the institution of the chachamim is protected. Mandalo ovid, one who does not take up the protection of the chachamim, ilhu the afsid anafshei. He's losing of his own volition. Mean that he is taking his own risk. If you want to take your own risk and not do what the Chachamim said, either to write in the shtar that's a shtar mu'achar, or to get a blank dated shover, then you're putting yourself at risk. If that's the case, we don't have to protect everybody from themselves. We instituted the mechanisms and the protocols that will protect individuals. If they choose not to abide by it, that's their problem. They're causing themselves losses. We can't protect such individuals if they are in their foolishness, don't want to take up the protections afforded to them by the Chachamim. So, Eino Chanami, we might do this today, and we might ignore the institution of Rav Safra either to write that it's a shtar mu'uchar or to write it in the shulver without any date on it, but you do that at your own risk. And that's what he's saying here. That's the problem with the individuals who get into transactions with these types of documents. If they want to protect themselves, then we've given them the mechanisms to do that, either to write in the shtar that's a shtar mu'uchar or to get a receipt that does not have a date on it. Okay, we're going to stop over here, three lines down on the top of Kufayin Bet, Amud Aleph.